Hi, I'm Lisa. I'm an alcoholic. It's wonderful to be here tonight. I have a sobriety date. It's June 8th of 99. I have a sponsor and oh, thank you. I have a sponsor that does both the Al-Anon and the AA program, which has just been a true gift in my life. I also was thinking today how 14 years ago I actually did this meeting with my dad, which was really, really special. I was AA speaker, he was the Al-Anon speaker, and yeah, I mean, what a gift, right? So I always like to start by saying that, this program has given me the gift to give, to have the wisdom to give every relationship in my life the love that they need and deserve. And it's given me the ability to love beyond what I ever thought capable, mostly because of God's grace in my life. And so I first got sober when I was 17. And there's a story in this book. It's called My Chance to Live. And it's, I really, really related to it when I first got sober. It says in that story, it says, AA gave this teenager the tools to climb out of her dark abyss of despair. And in it, she talks about, she says, her grandfather was an alcoholic and warned about alcoholism, and I'll never be like my grandfather, which is very much my story. And she says, drinking released me from the suffocating fear, the feelings of inadequacy, and that nagging voice in the back of my head that said I would never measure up. And that is, I just really, really related to that. I'm going to set the stage a little bit. I had an idyllic childhood until about 6 years old, and an identical twin sister and an older sister. And it came out that my mom had been unfaithful. And that's when the destabilization of my family happened. And my dad left to further his career. So, that abandonment, I had significant abandonment, and my mom fell into a very deep, dark depression. Ativan had just come on the scene. And so she was in bed a lot. And the narrative was, well, if my dad really loved me, he'd come back. And if my mom really loved me, she'd get out of bed. And so the anxiety really settled into my nervous system. And, I'm crying at school, I'm crying at home, which is overwhelming my mom. And so I learned that I actually really needed to emotionally repress what was happening because then I could survive, honestly, which I know probably a lot of the people in this room, some of you can relate to. So my first addiction was sugar. I just loved it. I couldn't wait to get it. It just gave me this amazing feeling and this amazing high. My twin sister and I, it was like, how can we get to the convenience store to get our sugar? And we always would, we never had words for our, the anxiety we were experiencing because of some pretty significant neglect, even though my parents loved us. So we would call it the uncomfortable feeling. That's what we would say. Well, I just always had the uncomfortable feeling, comparing your outsides to my insides, struggling at school. So remarriages happen, new babies are born, lots of siblings, seven siblings, a lot of love at this point because, remarriages happen, a little more stability. And I took my first drink in high school. I was not raised with alcohol in our home because my grandparents had drinking problems and one was a significant alcoholic, died of this disease. So I wasn't really around. So I took my first drink in high school. And the phenomenon of craving happened immediately for me. I absolutely loved the way it made me feel. I've just felt like honestly free. All of this, it talks about in Freedom from Bondage, it says, in this book, it says the severe emotional and mental twists were beginning long before alcohol entered my body. And that's very, very true for me. I just felt like I had this unmanageable mind, and the alcohol just calmed all of that right down. And I just felt like, prettier, happier, funnier, all the things, and got the boyfriend I always wanted. And honestly, it was fun for a while. And then the consequences started. And this is my first bottom. Three very significant things happened. Now I'm my senior year of high school. I fell off a balcony, a two-story balcony, should have died. I fell into sand. My mom came into the room, my bedroom, and she's just started like yelling at me about God knows what, right? I mean, who knows? I was always in trouble. And she just was coming at me. And I remember that I shoved her into my dresser and she just cowered. She just cowered away. And I remember screaming, "You just don't understand how much pain I'm in." I was dying on the inside. And I could not connect it to alcohol. Alcohol was my solution. It was not my problem. You know, it was just, I could not connect it. And then I'm at this party and I'm hiding in a closet with a bottle of alcohol. And people are calling me an alcoholic. And I had a moment of clarity where I thought, oh, I'm not who I think I am. I thought I was like this popular, fun party girl, right? And really, I was completely living in the bedevilments. And they talk about that on page 52. I was, you know, I couldn't, I was having problems with personal relationships. I couldn't control my emotional nature. I was full of fear. I was no use to anyone. And that's really how my life was. And I was a liability and I was not a good friend. And so the next morning, I went home. I had a dislocated toe. I smelled like a brewery. I was 17. And I told my parents, I think I'm an alcoholic. I told my mom, I think I have a drinking problem. And so she gave me a phone book and my insurance card, and off I went to my first treatment. I have to say, I saw mostly the differences and not the similarities. I had an appalling lack of perspective. I was young and I was afraid, and I was afraid of what my life would be like without drinking. One thing I can tell you is that I absolutely loved hearing about people talk about feelings, how they were feeling, the vulnerability, this amazing vulnerability that people were talking about. And I felt safe, honestly, for the first time in a long time. I wanted nothing to do with spirituality. In fact, a lot of that treatment, there was a 75-year-old man, bless his soul, and I would kind of hijack him. And I would be on the treatment smoking cigarettes, and my parents did this to me and complaining. You know, it was like just this victim mentality, you know, like just self-pity, complete self-pity. And so I graduated that program and one story I like to tell is this old man older man who became honestly like my best friend because my twin sister was still drinking at the time. And I'll never forget, I go home and she loves to tell this story. And she said, "Well, what did they say?" Because she was still drinking a lot, right? And I said, "They said I had to be totally abstinent." And she's like, "That's the best they could come up with." Like, she couldn't believe it, right? Like that we just that like that was their solution. It's like, yes, I have to be totally abstinent. So this man brought me, he lost all his family, had nothing, and he brought me to his little place, and all he had was like a mattress and his big book. And you know, he just held my shoulders and he said, "You're so young, Lisa. Please, please be stay sober for me." And I remember crying and like, you know, just like, I will, I promise, right? And like, it was like, I'm gonna rest on my laurels. I can do this. Like, the counselor suggested sober living. I said, "No, thank you." I just graduated, right? I think it was 60 days I was there, and off I went to college. And I honestly believed that if I managed life well, the scales were going to tip in my favor. I didn't want anything to do with recovery. I was going to tell everyone I was an alcoholic and that I was just going to, you know, I could do it, right? Because I had just graduated from this treatment facility. And I get to college and all the same things started happening, right? This unmanageable mind, the fear, my, you know, no boundaries. And I loved what physical sobriety produced. I really, really did. I started gaining like the respect of my family. And so I was on a diving team and I felt like I was doing really, really well. But the truth is, I did not have any defense against the first drink. So when my twin sister invited me to Boulder to visit her, And she said, I think you should just drink here and then go back to college and be sober. I was like, hey, that's a great idea, right? And I mean, she thought she was doing me a favor. And I'll never forget when the alcohol entered my body and I felt relief. I felt relief because I didn't have the love in this program. I didn't have my people, right? And I didn't have a God of my understanding. And so I really had no chance. And so that led to another bottom. This time it was with my twin sister. And we ended up being runaways and living in a fraternity home in Berkeley. At this point, cocaine had entered the picture, and I just mentioned that because it kind of kept the drinking going. And my poor family, they were just absolutely wrecked, didn't know what to do. And so they started planning an intervention. And one night, our drug dealer basically was talking about how we were going to have to start going to airports. And I remember thinking in my mind, jails, institutions, and death. This is where this is going. And my twin sister's dying. She's so sick of this disease. But I'm selfish and in my disease. And we're on the top of the fraternity, and she's talking about how she's at the jumping off point. And Bill talks about that. She's absolutely the jumping off point. And we are completely full of shame, just absolute wrecked. It talks about the four horsemen in here. The four horsemen were coming for us. And despair, bewilderment, frustration, all the total bewilderment and fear. And she said, if I jump off this roof, do you think it's going to paralyze me or it's going to kill me? Because I don't want to be paralyzed. She's like, I just want to end it. I want to be done with this world. And Tom Petty was playing in the background, I want to free fall out into nothing. I want to leave this world for a while. And I know at that moment that God did for me what I couldn't do for myself, because the love I have for her was just a little bit stronger than this disease. This disease, it says, is the rapacious creditor wanting to just bleed us of all self-sufficiency in every area of our life. And we were bankrupt. So I was able to get her home. And my parents, we actually lived in Berkeley, Orinda in Berkeley. And that walk home is a complete blackout. I don't even know how I got her home. But my parents had planned an intervention. So I woke up the next morning. I think I was like in my underwear and a tank top. And I walked downstairs, and there's like 25 family members, waiting for me. And it was like, ah. So it was such a gift, honestly. They all read letters to my sister and I, and just the pain that we had caused on their faces. Like, I knew at that moment that I can concede to my innermost self that I was an alcoholic. I'd been cut to ribbons, and given sufficient reason, could I stop drinking? No, I could not. And I like to talk about, this is what the bottom was for me. The less people tolerated us, the more we withdrew from society, from life itself. As we became subject of King Alcohol, shivering denizens of his mad realm, the chilling vapor that is loneliness settled down. It thickened, ever becoming blacker. That is where my disease took me. And now my family is offering me the gift of recovery and to go to an inpatient. And we said yes. And this time, I was ready. I really was ready and willing. We did a family program at the treatment center. My sister came to see me. And there was a serenity room there. It was Betty Ford. And she wrote this in her journal when she was in sober living before she came to see me, because I had to go to a treatment first. And then it was a whole thing because identical twins could not be together. By the way, I was born a codependent, okay? I'm an identical twin. So that was like really part of my being, which is also really amazing because I get to do this with my identical twin, and it's really such a gift. So she writes in her journal, she says, I want to go into the serenity room and pray about our sobriety together. We can do it as a team, and we can be that much stronger. That is a pretty powerful thing. And what a powerful thing it was, because at that time we had no God of our understanding. What we had was hope, willingness, And faith, maybe just as small as a mustard seed that we could draw from. You know, in that room they played What a Wonderful World. And I remember thinking, you know, if I really just like do the next thing that they suggest, maybe this could be a wonderful world again for me, because it was so dark when I was out there. And so when the counselor said, I think you should go to sober living, I said, yes. And I know that that was for me. I also know that it was a gift I was giving my family, because they could sleep at night knowing that I was safe and I was being drug tested and doing everything that, you know, to live there. My parents got really strong and out their Al-Anon programs. So when we went into sober living, my sister and I together, they had very strong boundaries. And my parents, they had to have the resolve of really meaning their boundaries, which was terrifying somewhat for us. It was the greatest gift they could have ever given us, but it also was really, really scary, because it was like, we're going to pay for your sober living, I think for 1 or 2 months, and you're on your own. And we were 20 years old at this time. So we're in sober living, and we get sponsors and we're working a full-time job. If we wanted to go to school, we had to pay for it ourselves. And life became really real and really wonderful because I'm clean and sober, but also just really heavy. And I'm coming up on step three, right? So I recognize my life was unmanageable. I'm kind of being restored to sanity. I'm being restored to sanity. I'm coming up on step three, and I'm having a hard time because I was not raised with a higher power. And my sponsor suggested that I get a God box, a higher power box, and I start putting things in it, which I did. And I'm about to turn 21, and I'm thinking, I never did the bar scene. Ooh, right? Like, I just start thinking about it. And my the owner of my sober living house, I started having those cravings again. And I knew I had something. I had to get the spirituality piece. And so the owner of my sober living home said, Lisa, I want you to go into a room by yourself, and I want you to get on your knees, and I want you to say the third step prayer. And she happened to be a Christian, so she told me to read Matthew about worry. And so I did that, and I went into a room by myself, and this is when the surrender happened for me. And this is when I had a vital spiritual experience, you know. And so I remember saying the third step prayer, you know, God, I offer myself to thee, to do with me as thy will. Relieve me of the bondages of self, that I may better do thy way. Better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness of thy will, thy way, and thy way of life. And it was really the bondage of self peace that I had to surrender. I really had to surrender. And I just found, you know, and then in Matthew, it was talking about how, you know, God takes care of the birds of the air and the lilies of the field. And how much more is God going to love me and take care of me, which was my biggest sort of block, right? Because my dad had left and I had all this abandonment, and I just was like, it really connected for me that like there could be a God out there that it was like that lost sheep, you know, and maybe he would just come for me. And I just truly believed that, and I truly surrendered. There's a difference between seeing my life as unmanageable, right, and really surrendering. And I just surrendered to whatever God wanted for me. And so then I launched onto step four. I really like to talk about how the steps have redeemed my life. And so I embarked on step four and got down all my fears, people I'd harmed, resentments, you know, sexual inventory, really getting it out root and branch, really from the roots. And on page, it says, there I humbly offered myself to God, as I then understood him, to do with me as he would. I placed myself unreservedly under his care and direction. I admitted for the first time that of myself I was nothing, that without him I was lost. I ruthlessly faced my sins and became willing to have my newfound friend take them away, root and branch. And I did that. I did an incredibly thorough step four and five, and I love this. This is what I experienced with my sponsor, which I know many of you either have or will have, hopefully. For the first time, I made completely honest contact with another human being. I showed someone who I really was without fear of rejection. I took an action that was designed to make me feel rather than just look better, and I was met with acceptance and love. I had never been rigorously honest with anyone, I don't think ever in my life. Even my twin sister, I could kind of sometimes manipulate, or, you know, like this was just such a beautiful thing for me. And it was a life-changing experience for me. And God did this sanctifying work through the steps, you know, of Alcoholics Anonymous, and really getting what blocked me out. And so I continued on with the steps, and I like to talk about the amends with my mom. You know, for lack of time, you know, I can't talk about all the steps, but I went to make amends with my mom, and I had really worked hard on forgiveness and just loving her exactly how she was, and really seeing my part and my relationship with my mom. And she at the time was still pretty sick, you know, with pill use and depression. And I remember sitting on her bed, and, you know, I just held her hands, and I remember saying, you know, I regret the pain that I've caused, and, you know, the emotional, I stole your emotional well-being, your peace of mind. You know, the best thing I can do is to be sober. And I really took responsibility. And she was so funny. She said, "Oh, thank you, Lisa. Now look up here what your twin sister did." And it was like a whole written amends with, like, her, you know, a picture of the two of them and her chip. And I was like, seriously, my amends is being compared to my twin sister? And I remember I called my sponsor, and I'm like, well, I mean, you know, it went okay, but it wasn't amazing, right? It was so funny. But I like to bring this up because the gift for me with my mom was that a decade later, she wrote me a card that I've saved. And she said, "Lisa Jane, perhaps all that you went through, the fear, the pain, the hard work of honesty and truth-telling has made you able to comfort, respect, protect, and love others that you have and are will, and that you have, are, and will serve. I'm so proud of you. Be safe and stay well." And that really meant so much to me, because I think it's because I'd had like a decade of a living amends, and I was in my purpose, right? To carry the message to the next suffering alcoholic. You know, I finished my steps, and my step 12 became someone else's step 1. The promises came true in my life. You know, I didn't regret the past, nor wish to shut the door on it. I had a newfound freedom and happiness. I was deeply involved in a church that I loved. And I got married, and I had a baby. And my husband was in the program, and he decided that he was not going to be part of this program anymore. And he relapsed and got really, really sick in his disease. And I had to get safe with my 4-month-old baby. And I thought, how did this happen to me? I don't understand. I'm doing everything right. I'm sober. I'm like involved with, you know, I have a God of my understanding. I'm sponsoring. It was like totally bewildering, right? And I love when it talks about, Dr. Bob says, the humility, you know, when we get, when we're humbled, you know, it's like this quietness of our heart that we get. And never to be, you know, vexed or irritable, never to wonder at what's done to us, you know. And I'm thinking, no, I'm wondering what's been done to me. Like, this is a new kind of powerlessness. And how am I going to do this? Like, how am I going to be a single mom with a 4-month-old baby? And I had to get on my knees and get into a lot of prayer and work these steps all over again. And really look at boundaries and get really healthy and, you know, sort of the other side, and let God do the redeeming love in my life once again. Believe that the promises were going to come true in my life once again. And, you know, that was I had a choice, you know, was I going to drink, or was I going to now learn how to be a sober woman, single mom? And thank God, you know, by God's grace, I went the direction of being a sober single mom. And, you know, my son's name was Noah, and I was able to be a single mom and get a job and go to school. And I did meet a man, a wonderful man, who ended up adopting my son, Noah, and we had two more kids. And I actually also bring that up because my son, Noah, he's 20 now. He actually became addicted to drugs and alcohol last summer. And here's the beautiful thing. When he reached out to me for help, I have a responsibility, I believe, to be a legacy changer for my family. And I got to be just an example of this program and calm and could really talk to him and talk him through it and not let the fear of that take me down. You know, there's an exchange that happens in this program. It's like, I can have this fear, but I take the fear and I exchange it and I give it to God and I get peace, right? And so, like, it's this beautiful thing. Like, I can still have joy in my life, even though I have things that are scaring me. My that son is clean and sober today, which is a real blessing. So I love to touch upon sponsorship. Sponsorship is a vital, vital part of my program. And I love it. I absolutely love it. And I had a sponsee that I've been working with for a really long time. And she had her only brother murdered by a drug dealer. And I remember she wanted to come to my house, right? And I was panicking. I was like, what do I do? Like, I'm going to pray for her, but do I get in the book? Or, you know, it's like, for some reason, I doubted that, like, I'd be able to love her well, like love her the ways that she needed in this absolute devastating loss. And what I needed to be was just a safe, sober place for her to land. And I had earned her respect. And I got to witness her walk through that. And then I got to witness her forgive the man in court that had murdered her brother and show mercy. And I think it's a beautiful example that this program gives us the ability to extend grace and mercy when it can be really, really hard, and then have it back, given back to ourselves. And so, yeah, my life today is deeply embedded in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I work the steps to the absolute best of my ability. I truly believe that working with others is one of the greatest immunities I have from picking up the first drink. And it's given me a new freedom and a new happiness that I never thought would be possible. Like I said, I get to be a legacy changer, and I get to be hopefully a safe place always for my children. And I love that I started with the story, with my chance to live. And this is actually the end of that story. And it says, growing up in AA, I have been blessed with children who have never seen their mother drunk. I have a husband who loves me simply because I am, and I have gained the respect of my family. What more could a broken down drunk ask for? Lord knows it is more than I ever thought possible, and ever so much more than I deserved, all because I was willing to believe AA just might work for me too. And I just love that because this is my story. And I also wanted to end with a promise. So all of the steps have a promise. And so I liked to touch upon the step three, right? When I talked about, you know, the kind of surrendering to God, right? Offering myself to God. And so this is the promise, the step three promise. Being all powerful, he provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. Established on such a footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans and designs, and the more and more we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life. So today, God is the director, and I truly believe that if I just do what I did when I first came in, right, that I can have immunity from alcohol, neutrality really from alcohol, safe and protected. Thank you. Okay. Well, thank you. Oh, I've turned this off.